On July 21st, 1969, astronaut Buzz Aldrin became the second person to walk on the moon. It was an event that captured the country's imagination and marked a huge accomplishment in the golden age of space exploration.
While it may seem that the golden age is behind us, when Aldrin looks to the future, he sees some much more ambitious projects ahead. Now he's advocating that we not only explore, but colonize. In his new book, Welcome to Mars, Making a Home on the Red Planet, he says we'll colonize Mars by the year 2040.
Buzz Aldrin, welcome to Central Time.
I'm happy to be with you.
So first of all, why do you think humans should be working toward colonizing Mars?
Well, I could almost read to you from my latest children's book, Welcome to Mars, because it really tells you why Mars is the most inhabitable planet in our solar system other than the Earth. And what we learn about studying the climate on Earth just may help us modify the climate on Mars, perhaps to what it might have been, we think, millions of years ago, very hospitable. The day is just a little longer there. The seasons are twice as long. And I've developed a system of transportation of cycling spaceships, a bit of which was cited in The Martian by Andy Weir, mm-hmm. as the cycling spaceship that dropped people off and picks them up at Mars.
Somewhere along the way, some humans are going to be the ones who make the first steps on Mars. Now, you were one of the first humans to make the first steps on the moon. Can you talk about what that experience was like, knowing that you were walking where no one else had set foot before?
Well, I watched Neil kind of shuffling around on the surface, picking up a contingency sample out of my window, and I could tell that moving around on Mars was going to be much simpler than we thought. So I got down to the bottom of the ladder and stepped on the moon, and I was just amazed at the boot prints were just so firm, and yet it was a dusty surface, and I used the words magnificent desolation to refer to the magnificence of human beings on this planet Earth, improving our transportation systems up to the point where we could land two people for a day or so on the surface of of the moon. But it was such a desolate place. And I knew that the day was 14 Earth days long and would get very, very hot. And the night, 14 days long, would be very, very cold. No air at all. And these extreme temperatures and the absence of the ability to grow things around. No life whatsoever. Very desolate place.
Now, for those first people to land on Mars, is that what it'll look like to them, do you think? A magnificent desolation? What will they see as they look around them?
They will see many habitats that have been deployed years before they first set foot on the surface of Mars, along with a number of others, to begin to occupy permanently. And to the degree that we have assembled and checked out these habitats and all the life support systems from Earth on the equipment that has been landed maybe 6 years earlier by international construction and international landers, similar to the ones that have been used on the moon, to set up similar bases for other nations to use, as we don't compete with anyone else like China. We cooperate even more than that. We help them at the moon, and then they support by the same type habitats that they land, so that the U.S. transportation system, consisting of cycling orbits between Earth and Mars, being resupplied and alternating every other 26 months, which is the time when the Earth catches up with Mars, and that's the time when we can travel Earth to Mars or Mars to Earth.
Can you paint a picture of what life would be like on Mars for those first settlers staying in those pre-built habitats?
Well, I would be guessing, based on a lot of people who have studied all sorts of things about Mars, and then people who have gone to similar habitat regions here on Earth. We have been experimenting at the space station on growing edibles, lettuce, carrots, and other elements, probably hydroponically also, and maybe tilapia fish that could be used for protein. The oxygen can be processed from the water that is much more readily available on Mars, and we can use nuclear power systems or the dimmer sunlight to transform the water into hydrogen and oxygen to power transportation around the surface, and also for rockets to take samples and people perhaps up to the moon of Mars.
We're talking to Buzz Aldrin, one of very few humans to walk on the moon. He is the author of the new book, Welcome to Mars, Making a Home on the Red Planet, making the case for Mars colonization. Now you, Buzz, went up with NASA to the moon. Now there's a lot of private companies getting involved in trying to get into low orbit and beyond. Do you think there's a big role for private companies in developing these spaceships, these habitats, everything else we need to live on Mars?
Yes, there certainly is. Just like with aviation, the initial aviation were World War One aircraft, and after the war, why these were air racing and stunting, and occasionally having accidents. So the government said, "Why don't you carry the airmail from New York to Chicago and many other places?" And for a few years, that proved out to be just outstanding. And then we started carrying passengers. So we start out with government initiation of the more difficult activities, as we did, of course, with the early unmanned rockets, and then Alan Shepard, Gus Grissom, suborbital, John Glenn, first American into orbit, the Mercury program, then followed by the very ambitious Gemini program with two people, that did rendezvous, long-duration spaceflight, computer reentry outside the spacecraft. And I was fortunate to be one of the people on the last Gemini mission, Gemini 12, to train underwater neutral buoyancy. And I guess because of my early scuba diving almost 10 years earlier. But then I had the great experience to take the first selfie in space with a camera that was mounted on the spacecraft. I was standing in the open hatch and decided, why not see if this works and take a picture of myself between the nighttime ultraviolet photographic passes of stars.
Sometimes when people think of a space program, whether we're talking about the effort to land on the moon or space shuttles or now other planets, they say, hey, we've got a lot of problems here on Earth, famine, war, poverty, that we need to solve. Space, great, but we shouldn't be putting our resources there. How do you answer that?
Well, I answer that by saying that countries, humans, will move outward in space, will be in orbit, will be on the moon, and will be at Mars. And if the United States wants to sit back and watch that happen, that's fine. It only took us 4% of discretionary funding in 1967, and we succeeded in putting two people for a day or two on the moon, and we did that 6 out of 7 times by the end of 1972, and discretionary funding went down, and right now it's 0.5%, and no one is on the moon. We haven't been capitalizing on those exploration efforts, Now, certainly, our young people, to be inspired, would like to be among the first people to journey to Mars and become the pilgrims, permanently building up colonies on the surface of Mars, improving a bit on the new film coming out, The Martian, that will start putting people there, and they will stay there helping the others who will be landing subsequently, because we'll really be testing all of these things out as we improve the transportation and are able to get there within 2 decades of the 50th anniversary of man's first landing on the moon, July 20th, 2019. So that means we'll be occupying Mars by 2040.
Now, you mentioned inspiring younger people with the space program, and you've this book, Welcome to Mars, is geared toward younger readers. Is that part of why you think we need to do this as something for younger people to strive for?
Well, absolutely. It's the young people who will be inheriting the pioneering developments that have been done by Silicon Valley and others throughout the country and the world that were based upon the surge of technology improvements that resulted from President Kennedy, after Sputnik, deciding we had to catch up with technology. Now, it happened to end up with a race with the Soviet Union, but that's because we had a lot of catching up to do. And we've been ahead for a while, and we did a joint mission with the Russians, Apollo Soyuz, and its legacy resulted in surviving the breakup of the Soviet Union and in their space stations and our space station efforts, culminating in the International Space Station.
We'll leave it there. Buzz Aldrin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was engineer and astronaut Buzz Aldrin. He was the second man to walk on the moon. His new book is called Welcome to Mars, Making a Home on the Red Planet.